Anything but.
Hey guys,
this is a special episode of Y'all-a-Ticks. Obviously, we're in mid-conversation here because what a night.
I think we started with you saying but. Yeah, he said Didn't anything we? But. It was a, yeah. And we caught that at the very beginning.
Yeah, so it is now Tuesday night, election night, 10:45, 10:30, 10:45. And I don't know if we're that much closer to figuring out who won.
There's
on the Democratic side.
So much we don't know. Yeah, and most of that is traceable to Dallas County, but also Williamson County. Dallas County shouldn't get all of the credit for the way things have gone tonight. Williamson County was another interesting one. For those of you who haven't paid attention and weren't with us for the whole night on election night, Dallas County and Williamson County, in both of those counties, Republicans decided a while back, like, hey, we're not going to do the usual thing where we Republicans and you Democrats get together and we have these joint primaries. Instead, what we're going to do is we're going to do our own and you're going to do your own. The problem with that whole thing is that a lot of voters didn't know about that. And so they started showing up to polls at these precincts that they normally go to, or these voting centers, and they were told, you're in the wrong place. And so if you didn't early vote and you waited until maybe after work on election day to head out, there you are. You're stuck, and maybe you don't make it in time.
And making sense of all this, because it has been a heck of a night, Vinny Minchillo from Glasshouse Strategy, a Republican ad man there on the right side of your screen, and then Domingo Garcia is with us, longtime Democrat in Dallas County and elsewhere. Former national president of LULAC as well. So
thankfully an attorney too, because we need the legal stuff tonight, because part of the reason everything was so messed up in Dallas County is that there was a judge in the evening who said, okay, responding to Colin Allred, who was a candidate in District 33, said, okay, you know what? There's enough confusion here where we need to leave the polls open past 7 p.m. We're going to keep them open till 9. Well, a while after that, we learned that Attorney General Ken Paxton went to the Texas Supreme Court and said, wait, they're not allowed to do that without going through the Attorney General's office first. Is that right?
That's right.
And the Texas Supreme Court said, okay, you know what? Let's end this. We got to throw out those votes, or at least preliminarily we're deciding that we got to set aside those votes that happened between that 7 and 9 window. So what a mess we're in now. So the attorney here on the panel, what happens here?
It looks like there's probably going to have to be a hearing before the district judge regarding whether his or her order was legally binding on ending the voting at extending the hours to 9 o'clock, or whether Paxton's position that only the votes at 7 should be counted. It's terrible if you disenfranchise people. I'm not sure why Paxton feels that, there was confusion. People, I have a friend that went to 3 different polling locations, took 2.5 hours to vote. Okay? And he's a regular voter, had to go 3 different places, and he was misdirected. How many people had that same experience in Dallas County? And yet, we had one here, when I saw somebody on Channel 8 tonight, that he was at 9 o'clock, and then they didn't let him vote.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's just wrong. Everybody who wants to vote should be allowed to vote. And we shouldn't be cutting up people off on the technicality, which is what this sounds like.
I was talking to a high-ranking Democrat tonight, just before we went on here with this live episode of Y'all-a-Ticks, and this Democrat said there's no way that ballots after 7 p.m. are going to count. No way it's going to count. It's pretty clear in state law. I was surprised to hear that from a Democrat, but here's something else that I discovered just kind of working the phone a few moments ago. So from 7 till 9, this is not in the order, from the judge in Dallas, but from 7 till 9, anybody who got there at 7:30, cast a ballot at 8:15, those were all provisional ballots. So they're easy to be set aside. And for those who don't know, a provisional ballot is one that is only counted if things get super tight and they have to confirm everything on there. So it may be a little easier to sort these out, but we don't know how many. No one can answer how many provisional ballots have been cast. Apparently there were a number of folks who did not get, a number of people who were working at the polls who did not get the word to stay open past 7 p.m. But, even zooming out from there, man, what a night for Republicans, for Democrats. Let's start at the top of the ballot, Vinny, with you. We're talking so much, we haven't even cracked the
I've started drinking
cold drinks here tonight.
Yeah. I have.
You have? Cheers, my friend.
I don't mind sharing a beer with you.
Yeah, right.
Cheers.
Thanks for staying up late with us, guys. The Republican race for U.S. Senate.
Yeah.
John Cornyn fighting for his political career tonight against Ken Paxton and against Wesley Hunt and a few other candidates on there. The surprise here to me was that Cornyn did what polls said he couldn't do, and he led the entire night. He's still ahead. He's going to a runoff with Ken Paxton, but he did better than I think people anticipated.
Yeah, I mean, I thought this would be close, but I thought Paxton would come out ahead, you know, kind of within 2 or 3 points, which is kind of where we are now.
Right now they're at about a point and a half, with an estimated total vote of 69%.
But Cornyn's still leading.
Cornyn's still leading.
Big surprise for me, though, is Ken Paxton wildly underperforming in Collin County.
Yeah,
where he's from.
His home county. Now, we were talking about it before. I mean, that's where Angela Paxton is from, too.
Yeah.
So, you know, what's going on in Collin County? That's, you know, that was the big surprise of the night for me.
Yeah.
And then on the Democratic side, we talked about this with Jason on the big board earlier, Domingo, and Tallarico, who had a 4 or 5 month head start because Jasmine Crockett got into the race very late, the last possible day you could file, the last possible 90 minutes you could file is when she announced. But James Tallarico has been across the state. He's worked the valley. He's campaigned with Bobby Pulido, a famous Tejano star down there. He's really run up the totals everywhere else. I'm talking to a number of Democrats who say, listen, this is Tallarico won this thing. At the end of the day, despite what happens in Dallas County, Tallarico has enough votes.
I think Tallarico will put together a very strong coalition across the state that gained a lot of momentum, especially among young voters. College campuses are going to turn out in record numbers. I read something like 21% of voters in the Democratic primary. It was their first time voting in a primary.
Wow.
So I think enlarged the electorate. Jasmine is a firebrand. You know, she also brought some people to the polls. I think her problem was she was limited to Dallas and Harris County, which was her base. Now, that's 31% of the statewide vote, but you got to go get votes somewhere else. And I think Tallarico was able to run up score in the Valley. I think he's going to do well in Travis County, Williamson County, and I think that's going to put him ahead. And he'll be a very formidable opponent to either Ken Paxton. You know, here you got the preacher and the adulterer, the Ten Commandments, and the guy who, you know, is doing Sunday school classes. I mean, that's the contrast if you have that election.
How does that play out with the ads, man?
Well, they almost write themselves. I think
Vinny produces some great ads, and he's the guy we go to also to break down what ads accomplish and don't accomplish sometimes.
And ads are going to be a big deal in this. But I think I will say one consultant thing that, you know, for Jasmine Crockett, there's really not a path for her to win the general. So I think for Democrats, this is a moment of actual clarity, you know, for them to put Tallarico forward.
So good night for Democrats in that regard.
I think in that regard, it's a sensible vote.
So Republicans though wanted her to win the primary so then why would Ken Paxton go to the Supreme Court and ask them to make a ruling that might hurt her more than Tallarico?
Well, let's not let facts get in the way of politics here. You know, so what we've got now is no matter whose fault it is or whatever happened, it doesn't matter. Now it's a race to message this thing.
And what's that going to be?
Well, I'd say if you're the Democrats, the message is those Republicans have tinkered with the system and suppressed the vote and took your right to vote away. If you're on the Republican side, it's those knuckleheads in the blue counties can't even run an election. You would want to let them, you know, go run the state. So that'll be the race to the messages.
Domingo, you're ready for it, man.
Yeah, I think it's just voter suppression. Look,
he's on it. He's on message.
Voter suppression.
He is on message.
And really, keeping the polls open until 9 o'clock happens a lot. You've seen the lines in some of these races, especially Houston, usually where you got, you know, people a block, 2 blocks waiting at 7 o'clock to vote, and the judges say, you know what, let those people vote. They're in line. And now you're saying, no, you know what? You're not in the door at 7. You don't get to vote. And working people who actually have a job, you know, by the time they get off work, drop off the kids, whatever, it's going to be close to 7.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I think Republicans are disenfranchised working people.
Mm-hmm. If we had a period of time before the election where people could go vote on numbers of days,
that's
a couple weeks before.
If there were ever a commercial for early voting, this is it in Dallas County.
That
on
one
election
I totally
night.
Agree. Vote early.
Vote early.
Avoid the lines and the possible chaos you're going to have election day.
It is
day.
Such a better experience. Domingo, you were talking with me about this offline, and you said something that just it stuck with me. You think, though, here that if even if the Texas Supreme Court hears arguments about this, and, you know, again, this is a preliminary ruling that they're saying that those ballots passed, you know, between seven and nine don't count. You think that the Democratic Party can still say, we don't care what the Supreme Court has to say here, we're counting those ballots?
I think the state Democratic Party, it basically gets the local county elections departments to run their primary for them.
Yeah, they the parties pay for these elections,
right,
the primaries.
And if a court says, you know what, we are not going to count any votes after 7, the party can say, you know, we are going to count them until 9. It's our election, our voters, and we're going to count them.
So it's the party's prerogative.
It's the party's prerogative.
Okay.
And now after that, if I'm Jasmine Crockett and I think that I should count those votes or not count them if I'm Tellerico, whoever, which one, then that could wind up in court.
But so this is going to be a fight that goes back
and forth. But I think at some point the Democratic elder statesmen and women will step in once we know we have a clear winner and that the votes aren't going to really change it.
Now, when you say...
Yeah, what do you mean by that?
who would have to do that?
Barack Obama might step in, you know, or maybe Kamala Harris.
That wouldn't surprise you that one of those figures might call Crockett, if that's the way things turn out, and say, listen, it's time to move on.
It's not in the best interest of the Democratic Party in Texas or the Democratic Party in America and a potential biblical size, Texas size election where a Democrat can finally crack the red wall, you know, and it's everybody thinks Tellerico, that's his electability argument, that he's more electable statewide than Jasmine Crockett, then I think that's where they come in, and that's where Ms. Crockett's going to have to make a really tough choice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The longer this goes on, the better it is for Republicans, because it makes the Democratic Party look like they're in disarray.
Well, and also Republicans are going to have their own serious fist fight going on with Ken Paxton and John Cornyn. I mean, we're already getting a preview of it in their speeches on election night.
Yeah.
This is going to be, we talked about this beforehand, you know, we expected this to go to this runoff, and you were saying that this we're going to get to a whole different level of nastiness in this runoff.
And what's going to be tough is the Cornyn people have dropped $100 million on Paxton's head with some of the best opposition hits I've ever seen in 25
Vicious,
years
man.
Of
wow.
politics.
Wow.
And they haven't moved the numbers. They haven't moved Paxton down and haven't really moved Cornyn up to any perceptible amount. So they've got to be going, we got to find another way to do this.
So where does Wesley Hunt's support go?
That's a great question. I think you know, Wesley Hunt and Ken Paxton, they were both anti-Cornyn voters.
Yep. Yeah.
So the question is, do the Wesley Hunt people, do they go, all right, I'll go to Paxton, or do they say, a pox on both their houses, I'm staying home?
Well, and also the wild card here for that and for any of these races that go to runoff is that they're going to a runoff, which will be May, what, 26th?
26th.
And I mean, I'm paid to know these things, and I still had to think about it for a second. That is going to be a low turnout affair compared to what we have seen. This was a pretty extraordinary turnout that we've had for this primary election. That's going to be a low turnout affair, and you never know what's going to happen in those.
Right before Memorial Day.
I think you do.
Before Memorial Day.
Only the hardcore, you know, political activists vote in that runoff.
So
in
that
May.
Favors Paxton, doesn't
and that
it?
That favors Paxton.
Favors Paxton.
He has that hardcore, you know, 3R Republican voters, and the Cornyn voters that maybe it's that suburban housewife in Katy or in Southlake might say, you know what, I'm going to Disney World. I'm not going to go home.
And
that favors Paxton.
Yeah. That's the challenge for Cornyn. And I think the campaign knows that going in, that they've got to do that. They have to bring out everybody who voted this time, and they've got to get some more. It's doable. It ain't easy.
But if you're Democrats, you're saying, here we were so ready to sit back and just pop open the popcorn and watch these two just thrash each other in this runoff and spend all of their money doing so, and then we would jump back in and take on whoever is the very bruised winner of that runoff, but yet we've got this fire burning on the Democratic side now too, and we don't know how long it's going to take to put that out.
I anticipate it'll be done within 30 days.
Okay.
30 days? That's
30
a long
days.
Time,
that's a long
man.
Time.
That's a long time.
And in the meantime, they have
but again,
to stay
I think
active.
There's a hearing probably. There'll be an emergency hearing here in the next 72 hours. I haven't seen the latest results. And then it's going to be up to the candidates to decide if they want to fight that or not. And does it make a difference? If Tellerico has a 100,000 vote lead statewide, and Dallas County, we're counting another 90,000 votes, it's not going to matter.
But both of these candidates now are also going to have to stay active for that period of time. They're exhausted. You know, you didn't get to the finish line. You got to the start line again. That's an exhausting process to go through. And you got to be careful, don't you, that you walk this tightrope of not, you know, putting it in voters' minds too much that they've been cheated in some way, because you don't want to turn them off for November. You don't want to make them disengage and go, well, I guess my vote doesn't count, and they're telling me that, you know, it's all against me, and, you know, right. What can I do?
Look, it's really tough for both of them. If you notice, they really didn't attack each other. There was these outside PACs that were attacking Jasmine as not being electable in a fall election. But there weren't really – their politics are about the same. I mean, on most platforms, whether it's immigration, education, you go down the line, you can't really tell the difference between Tallarico and Jasmine Crockett. So I think at some point at the end of this court battle, I think if the numbers show Tallarico won, which I think is what's going to happen, Jasmine's going to have to step back, and her supporters have to decide to support Tallarico for the general election, as opposed to them having a bitter mouth that maybe Jasmine was cheated or things were done that took her out of the ballot.
Does President Trump finally get involved with Cornyn now? And does he support Cornyn? Does he support Paxton?
Yeah.
Finally endorse.
Well, you know, I'm not in the business of predicting what the president will and will not do.
Who knows?
But I think yes. I think he comes in now, and I think he supports Cornyn, and it's a $200 million decision. You know, I think if it's Paxton Tallarico, the Republicans are perfectly prepared to put in $200 million to support,
which is
unprecedented amount.
This is already the most expensive Senate primary in the nation's history, not just the state.
Yeah, but for Elon Musk, it's a drop in the bucket. I mean, he's almost a trillionaire. Right. But he's a Texan now, you know.
but if you look at it, if it's Cornyn and Tallarico, you could spend a fraction of that. And because I think this is a matchup, and I think Cornyn wins this by the generic ballot, whatever it is right now, you know, 52-42, whatever the generic ballot is in the state.
If it's Cornyn Tallarico, you think it's that much of a spread?
Yep.
Really?
Yeah.
Let's talk about the Republican race for Texas Attorney General as well. We're going to go through each of these. We don't have to spend as much time as we did on that one there. But the Republican race for Texas Attorney General, four people in this race: Aaron Reich, Joan Huffman, Mays Middleton, who is known as MAGA Mays Middleton, if you've seen any of the ads.
And how could you not have seen
them?
And then Congressman Chip Roy. Chip Roy had always led all the polling. We saw Chip Roy told us at one point a few weeks back he might win this thing outright. But when it comes down to it, what's the final?
40% to 30%. They're
Mays
headed
Middleton.
To a runoff.
Mays Middleton
ahead.
Ended up ahead. I mean, if you look at the polls, that surprised me. Did it surprise you at all?
I was surprised how wrong the polls were on this.
How did they get that wrong?
I don't know. they for some reason must have overestimated, you know, Roy's support. I mean, I think Middleton's about where he ought to be with 40. I think that's about right. I don't know. For the most part, the pollsters, I think, have done a pretty good job on the Republican side this time, but we're way off on this one. And so you've got to factor in Middleton had lots more money and lots more organization. Roy got in late, and he's kind of a regional candidate.
And if you think about the runoff and who shows up, if it's the most rabid voters, then that would probably favor Middleton, wouldn't it?
Well, you know, it depends who you ask. I think Roy is certainly a conservative stalwart. Although I think I'd go advantage Middleton, and I think it's on money and organization.
Yeah.
He'll be able to turn his people back out.
On the Democratic side of this, for Attorney General, you've got Senator Nathan Johnson from Dallas up against former Galveston Mayor Joe Jaworski. that one, as we speak right now, Nathan Johnson ahead, 48.5% to 27% in that one. And then we've got a third candidate, Anthony Box, siphoning off quite a few votes there to keep either one of those from going over 50. Still a lot of vote out, though, on that one, Domingo. And Nathan Johnson has been performing well in these big vote centers, and there's still some vote to come in. Might be able to avoid a runoff narrowly.
I think the Dallas County, when all the Dallas County votes come in, they'll probably put them over 50. and he'll be the nominee for AG. He's going to be the strongest Democratic candidate, state senator, well-funded, had some very cute commercials that he was running, you know, during the campaign. So I think he's going to win without a runoff, and he'll be a formal opponent in the fall. And by the way, Gina Hinojosa is going to win the Democratic nomination. Mm-hmm. And I think she's also developing some charismatic movement-type support that I've seen across the state for her also. She's not going to have the money Abbott's going to have, but she's going to be competitive.
But could
Tallarico define competitive within 10 points?
52-42, generic ballot, right? I mean, that's kind of what they look like. Yeah. But would Tallarico, I mean, could he help Gina Hinojosa?
I think Tallarico, I think it's good. First of all, you know, the party that's out of power
sure
normally wins these midterm elections.
Congressional races, yeah.
Congressional. And I think also statewide, Beto, when he got to 48%, it was one of those times. And that's where we got sort of the stars are aligning, and they all seem to be blue. A lot of Trump's support, I think, that was there, especially in the Hispanic community, there's buyer's remorse. We didn't buy into, you know, abuelitas and abuelitos, grandmas and grandpas being arrested and deported, or me being checked to see if I was a U.S. citizen and I got to show my papers. And then the economy hasn't gotten any better. And I think those Hispanics that voted Republican are going to come back, as well as some other, I'm going to call it moderate George Bush Republicans, might say, we're not MAGA. We don't recognize this Republican Party. Mm. And then you could have a Tallarico win. And then a Gina Hinojosa could get up. I don't know that she could win, but she could get into the 48s.
That'd be extraordinary. That. The other upset tonight is the race for agriculture commissioner. Yep. Sid Miller, the incumbent.
At least as we speak right now.
As we speak right now. Right. How much is
three quarters of the estimated total vote has been counted.
He's behind by 89,000.
And he's behind by almost 90,000
votes. Williamson County's not in.
Yeah, Williamson County's not in. A lot of the smaller counties out in sort of the middle and western part of Texas, there's a fair number of those that haven't produced anything. A lot of those are small shots of votes, but they can add up when you start, you know, putting them all together. But that was, I think, a little bit of a surprise. And if we see an incumbent being picked off like that, we just don't see that very often here in Texas, which has been run by Republicans across the board in state government for more than three decades now. You usually don't see an incumbent picked off in the primaries.
Yeah, this is a really interesting race, and this is one of the bright spots for Abbott tonight. You know, it's one of the candidates that he endorsed that is doing well.
Nate Sheets and Sid Miller was endorsed by Trump.
By Trump.
But pretty late in the game.
And again, this is another race, too, where Miller was leading every poll significantly.
True.
Yeah.
So it's another one that they've gotten wrong, at least so far. But I think one of the things that's interesting about this race is normally ag commissioner was always, you know, well, we'll leave it to the farmers and the ranchers to vote on this. You know, people in Dallas and Harris County a lot of times would just skip that race.
Yeah.
In this case, we've kind of flipped the script, and Nate Sheets has campaigned hard to, you know, moms in Collin County and in Williamson County and Montgomery County, talking about their food and all that stuff. So, this is a really surprising one, and I think changes the look of the ag commissioner race going forward.
Yeah, it totally does. Mm-hmm. Then the Republican race for state comptroller, the state's
the comptroller,
treasurer.
Exciting.
The numbers who knows guy. What the comptroller does? The state's CFO, chief financial officer here.
Writes
also the
checks.
Person that manages the school voucher program.
Yeah.
But this one, I think we talked about the podcast, a few episodes ago for our voter guide. This is kind of a stepping stone to higher office.
Yeah.
Because people don't necessarily know what this job does. But you had Don Huff Fines on the Republican side, former state senator from Dallas, very popular
with the
MAGA crowd.
Made a run for governor last time around.
And he highly influential to Governor Abbott.
Yeah.
Made Abbott change his position on
a number
of things during
COVID. Right. Yeah.
Pushed him way right, and Abbott hasn't returned since.
That race has been called, by the way, for Don Huff Fines.
It is called for Huff Fines. He was running against Kelly Hancock, who's the acting comptroller
wasn't
right
even close, and that had four candidates in it, all with three of them with, you know, pretty good name recognition, and this one wasn't even close.
Christy Craddock. So Huff Fines has 57% of the vote. Hancock, who's the acting comptroller, the incumbent, who was endorsed by Governor Abbott, with 23% of the vote. Christy Craddock, the railroad commissioner, with 15% of the vote. Huff Fines won a four-person race without a runoff.
With almost 58% of the vote, and that's with 80% of the total vote estimated.
If Abbott had a good night with Nate Sheets, how surprised is he tonight that Kelly Hancock didn't get across the finish line to a runoff?
Well, it was looking pretty bad all the way through. I mean, Kelly Hancock is really he's a low-key guy, which I think for a comptroller, we all want a low-key comptroller. But he's a low-key guy, and he just really never broke out of that. Huffines brought a lot of money to the race, and a lot of visibility to the race. And you hit it on the head. You know, it's, you know, I don't think Don Huffines wants to be comptroller any more than I want to be comptroller. You know, I think he's really looking at this to, number one, annoy Greg Abbott every single day that he can, and then line himself up for a run for governor.
Yeah, I can't wait to see that one if it's an Abbott-Huffines primary, if that were to ever materialize.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting if he tries to implement that voucher program, which has become very controversial, and that was Abbott's number one issue in the legislature, or if he tries to put some kinks in it and slow that down.
Here's something that interests me.
I didn't think about that.
Here's something that interests me about that though, is that you see the breakdown of votes here, and you know, just as I'm doing the quick math on this in my head, if we flip over to the Democratic side there, State Senator Sarah Eckhart from the Austin area ended up with 1 million votes so far. That's with only 71% or so of the vote in that's expected. That's more votes than Don Huffines has at this point.
Yeah.
And it looks almost here like if I go down through the different candidates, Democrats actually had more votes in that race than Republicans did. This has been touted by Democrats as one seat that they might finally be able to pick up statewide. They have not had a statewide, I don't have to tell you this, Domingo, you know it. It's been more than three decades. 1994 was the last time Democrats won statewide races. How good of a chance do you think Sarah Eckhart has here against Don Huffines?
Again, it's a long shot. It's that generic ticket that we talked about earlier. But it seems like every 2 years, the Democrats get 2%. Let me tell you why. A lot of the Republican voters, they're disappearing. They're dying. Okay? And you got younger voters replacing those. They're much more diverse. They reflect the Texas electorate much better. And so there's that. Every 2 years, that vote is changing. If you guys remember, I was in Dallas County in 2004. Every seat was held by a Republican. And all of a sudden, in 2 years, it flipped. I think Texas statewide, we're getting closer to that flip tipping point than we've been ever before.
Domingo, I've known you for a long time. We've talked about this blue wave forever, man. I haven't seen anything yet, though.
Well, Beto did.
Beto got close.
Yeah, he even won Tarrant County. And I think that the election, that special election for the state Senate seat in Tarrant County, I don't think that was a fluke. I think their people are upset with the Republican Party. They're the party in power, and things are not, people are not happy with what's happening.
Yeah, that was
and
Taylor.
And nobody would check it out on that party.
Beto ran against a wildly unlikable candidate, too, in Senator Cruz. So, you know, I mean, that was what helped him get that close. But to talk about this comptroller election, this honestly is an election I worry about, because I do think that Huffines has a ceiling, and I think he does not have broad appeal, you know, beyond the hardcore Republican primary voter. It's a race I would worry about.
And he didn't have the support of the governor in this race. And also, one of his big campaign promises is to, quote unquote, doge Texas.
Sure.
And come in and you know, cut and you know, waste, fraud, and abuse, that sort of thing. It'll be interesting to see how much that appeals as we go into
general. He's not a super charming guy. You know, I mean, it's just not his thing.
He's actually weird looking. When I see him on TV, I'm wondering how people are voting for this guy.
Huffines. But when it comes to Eckhart, I mean, if you're concerned about that, it's that means that Eckhart would have to raise some money and really ride the coattails of Tallarico if he's the nominee, right?
She's going to need $10-20 million, which is not in the couch cushions.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, Beto raised $75-80 million. Mm-hmm. That's not typical Democratic money. You know, usually Democrats don't spend their money in Texas. They go out there to Michigan and all the other battleground states. Tallarico is going to be able to raise $100 million. And that's a lot of money to get out the vote for low propensity voters that normally Democrats don't have the money to touch. So that's why I think it might have coattails, and Sarah Eckhart can maybe win, who's very popular down in Austin.
Yeah.
I'm not sure he can do that. If Cornyn is the nominee, Paxton's the nominee, I'm with you. But if it's Cornyn the nominee, I think the money stays out.
Interesting.
The only thing is, Democrats have very few shots, you know, nationally to win. And Texas, North Carolina, Maine, Alaska, that's where they're thinking the shots are.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so Domingo, this is being watched nationally. District 15, Congressional District 15 down in the valley. Bobby Pulido, I don't think anybody's shocked by this. Tejano Star did very, very well tonight. This race has been called for him. He beat Ada Cuellar, and he'll be taking on the incumbent Monica de la Cruz, who was unchallenged in this primary. You see this as one of those spots that might make Republicans in Texas uncomfortable with the redistricting decisions?
Yeah, the redistricting tried to basically, three Democrats down there, well, two, Vicente Gonzalez and Henry Cuellar, I think both of them are going to win their seats. Trump carried their districts, but they won their congressional seats. And Bobby Pulido is a Tejano superstar. A lot of Dallasites might not know him, but in the Tejano community, and that's an 80% Hispanic district, he's very well known. He's a centrist. You know, he's pro-gun. He's against abortion, and he's a Democrat. And he has a legacy there. So I think he has a very good shot of flipping that seat. And the other one there, the Tony Gonzalez district, that goes from Del Rio all the way to El Paso, has been flipping sides back and forth. And Tony Gonzalez is in the middle of a very bad scandal, having an affair with his aide who didn't commit suicide. And he's going to be in a runoff with a pro-gun nut, basically, down there. And either whoever comes out of there is going to be damaged. And then a Democrat could pick up that seat also.
And a lot of Republicans, or some Republicans, have even been calling for Gonzalez to step down over all of this. Does that one concern you, Vinny? And are you concerned about the carve-up, the, you know, kind of unorthodox mid-decade redistricting that Republicans did here? Did they make some of these districts safe enough that they tried to pull away from Democrats?
Well, it was always a calculated risk, right? Yeah. And nobody had the Tony Gonzalez scandal on their bingo card.
Yeah.
I think if you took that out of the equation, this race is over. Tony Gonzalez wins. He's well liked. He's a good candidate. But yeah, this scandal is heartbreaking and horrible, and is definitely going to affect that election. Maybe he hangs on. Maybe he doesn't. It's going to be very close. Now, De La Cruz, very good candidate.
Are you worried about Bobby Pulido down there?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it could be close. She's not going down without a fight. She's a good candidate too.
Yeah, and that district has become more Republican, when the lines have moved here.
Yeah.
It's leaning more Republican.
Yeah. So I think a lot of those Hispanic Republicans have buyer's remorse that voted for Trump and for Ted Cruz, for example. And I think they're going to come back. And as we saw in that state Senate seat in Tarrant County, where, you know, Kamala Harris won the Stockyards, Northside, Fort Worth, traditional Hispanic area, 54% to 46. But Taylor Rhett got, I think, 81% of the Hispanic vote there.
Hmm. Well, interesting thing about the Valley, too, I think that there was a lot of hand-wringing among Democrats after 2024, because President Trump, didn't run the board down there, but got as close as a Republican has gotten to running the board down in the Valley. And Democrats used to be able to, rely on that being solidly blue down there at the bottom of Texas. But this time, if we looked at early voting, we don't have the full election day voting in yet, but in early voting, when people could choose, maybe they voted Republican last time. This time, you get to choose in a primary which way you're going to vote. And Democrats saw much bigger turnout than Republicans, especially in some of these big population centers around, Brownsville, Harlingen, McAllen, Laredo, that has to be a relief for Democrats right now to see that. But how do you, continue that momentum? We've seen Politico putting out headlines from Trump supporters and big-time Republicans down in the Valley saying, hey, this immigration, the way it's being carried out across the country, is not sitting well here. And it's also not sitting well that, like, for instance, we don't have people able to build homes and so forth. And, of course, they notice tariffs along the border in ways that we don't, maybe in other places.
All the construction, companies down in South Texas, the home builders, Republicans, all of them, who supported Monica de la Cruz, they're saying we don't got no workers to do our roofing, our plumbing. This immigration thing went too far. I thought we were only going to get the worst of the worst, and now people are afraid to go to work. The housing market is collapsing. home building is stopping. The economy is grinding to a halt with the closing of the border. They rely on international trade in Laredo and down in McAllen.
It's huge.
And when all of that is basically comes to a halt, then that impacts the whole economy. That's why I think the Republicans misplayed their hand. They had a lot of Hispanics who are, you know, very religious, patriotic, have a lot of values that Republicans appeal to, that were swinging toward the R side. That's why, like, Starr County voted, you know, Republican for the first time, whatever, 150 years. But I think Starr County is going to go Democrat, and so will all the other counties, because of the Republican policies and its impact on their pocketbooks and its impact on their ability to just go about their business on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, the Republican mayor of McAllen, Javier Villalobos, told us the same thing. This is a little bit more than we signed up for here. And the home builders, the development in McAllen, which has a lot of development there.
It's booming.
It's been stunted. Yeah. It's been stunted by the enforcement actions down there. And people are afraid to come across. Let's go back to the Al Green race and Christian Menefee congressional race in Harris County. This is interesting to me because this is another one of these generational issues.
Right.
Is it time, like Joe Biden, you know, 2 years ago?
Or Nancy Pelosi.
Is it time, at a certain age, do you age out? Is it time for you to hand the torch to the younger generation? Christian Menefee is the former Harris County attorney. He won the special election to fill the seat for Sylvester Turner after his sudden passing. And now Al Green, who was redistricted out of a seat, says, listen, I'm going to run for that, too. I'm not done in Congress. So you have these two generations of Democrats running against each other, and this is going to a runoff now. Christian Menefee with 48% of the vote, but Al Green close behind with 43% of the vote. Which way does this one go?
You know, I know both of them very well. And Al Green, of course, is famous for, you know, getting his, what's his stick?
Shaking the stick and shaking it at President Trump.
But he's also in his 70s, you know, and he, you know, I would have hoped that he would have passed the torch on to a younger generation, kind of like Nancy Pelosi did by passing it on to Jeffers, but which Biden didn't do until it was the last minute.
Yeah.
So I think ageism is a problem, and it's hard for people to let go of that power when they've been in D.C. for so long. But it's in the interest of the Democratic Party that we get youthful, young, dynamic people to run. That's why I'm excited about the Senate race. You got Tallarico was 36, and Jasmine's in her 40s.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a big difference from John Cornyn, who's not, what, his late 70s now?
He's middle 70s.
Mid-70s. But that's the very 64. Point that Wesley Hunt made.
Yeah, right.
Is about, hey, the Senate's not a retirement home.
Right. But that's a, I mean, now.
Does he get carried out like Mitchell? Or, I
mean. Well, ooga. You know, I mean, I kind of feel bad for Al Green and, you know, Al Green and Joe Biden. That's bad ways to go out. Mm-hmm. You know, it'd be nice to be able to take that victory lap and you know, get the school named after you and, you know, and all that kind of stuff. So Al had that opportunity and now he's. I think he's going to lose this ultimately. I'm ready to make a rule that if you owned an 8-track deck, you should not qualify.
Just stay out. Yeah.
VHS was saying, huh?
Yeah, right. Well, the Associated Press is estimating at this point that there's still 30% of the vote to be counted in that race. Right now, Christian Menefee at 48%. There's a chance that he can eke out 50%, but we'll have to see on that one.
And, you know, it's not a State of the Union speech unless Al Green gets kicked out. So he'll have to come back next year.
He finds ways every time. Let's go down to District 30. This is Jasmine Crockett's old district in Dallas. Pastor from Friendship West Baptist Church, Freddie Haynes, just running away with that. He's been called for that election. He was endorsed by Jasmine Crockett. That's not a shock.
He's one of the most popular preachers here in DFW, and that was a foregone conclusion. When he announced he was running, it's going to be Congressman Freddie Haynes now.
It's a three-way race, and he's pulling 75% of that vote, so it's pretty amazing. District 33, this one was an interesting one tonight. This is a new district where, you know, when they redrew the maps here in Texas, they were able to sort of cram, you know, Democrats into this this district. And so we had Julie Johnson, who was the congresswoman for District 32, move over to this one. And then the guy she replaced in District 32 years ago, Colin Allred, also ran in this one. That one looks headed for a runoff between those two.
Does that surprise you? Because Colin Allred is ahead right now as we record this, 45% to 34%. He's ahead by about 5,000 votes. Does that surprise you?
No, I mean, a lot of Jasmine Crockett's old district, 30, is also part of the new 33. So he started out with that base. And so it is a majority-minority district, African-American, Hispanic majority, 70. So it was really tough for Julie to break in there. It does have Oak Lawn and some parts, Kessler Park, that were strong base of support for. But once she got out of those areas, she was having a hard time getting traction. Now, that's why I think Colin is at 45. He'll probably wind up winning the runoff.
You think so?
Yeah.
Wow.
Colin O'Reilly should have won this going away. He continues to run the same horrible, boring, terrible, scripted, dreary campaign that he's run and loses with time after time, yet continues to do it.
He won three times in Congress, and he lost two Senate races. Well, he lost one, and he dropped out of the other.
Right. But when he was in this Senate race, on paper, if you were looking at all the candidates on paper, Colin O'Reilly should win this going away.
Civil rights attorney, NFL player,
good-looking, smart. You know, this guy's a terrific candidate. And then they put him in front of a teleprompter, and it's just horrible. You know, so I think he'll win, but it's just a terrible campaign.
Don't make him tell you to keep your name or keep his name out of your mouth.
Yeah, okay, now you know what? Now when he did that video about James Tallarico, absolutely the finest 2 minutes he's ever done.
Because he was fired up.
That he was working
guy,
out.
That guy's scary. That guy is a guy I'd vote for. You know, let that guy out.
Is that on the record, Vin?
If he was a Republican. No, but seriously, if they let that guy run for office, he'd have won the Senate.
But we've never seen that guy.
We've never seen that guy. And that guy, that's a guy.
Yeah, he's charisma challenged. You know? But at the same time, he does have a great resume. And I think that's going to be enough for this race.
Yes, I agree with that.
Let's go to Congressional District 32. This was another one that was redrawn. That was the one that Julie Johnson was the representative
for. And Colin O'Reilly,
It's very much a Republican district now because it stretches from the top of Dallas, North Dallas there, even into Collin County a little bit, all the way across almost to the Louisiana border. And Jace Yarbrough, who was endorsed by Trump and Abbott in this one, right now, as we speak, there's still about 31% of the estimated vote to come in, according to the AP. He's sitting at 49.4%. This was a crowded field, though, with a bunch of candidates.
There's 10 people in this race.
Yeah.
He could win this outright.
Almost. He's almost there, but not quite. That one might be headed to a runoff.
He's had a ton of third-party money spent on his behalf.
Yeah.
He's raised money and... Yeah, that's remarkable to be close to 50 in a 10-person race.
Yeah,
in an open seat, basically.
An open seat.
Absolutely an open seat. What else do you have on here?
We just have some state houses.
Let's go to these state house seats.
We didn't talk about Mark Teixeira.
We didn't talk about the Texas Ranger.
Texas Ranger, great.
Did he see? You're telling me, did he win tonight?
He won it going away.
Did he really?
Yeah.
Wow, former Texas Ranger heading to potentially. He's going to be the nominee.
Dan Crenshaw. We didn't talk about that either.
We didn't talk about Dan Crenshaw.
Down near the Houston area.
That's a crazy. That's a crazy one.
Houston. Yeah.
Yeah.
Lost to Steve Toth.
He lost to Steve Toth in the primary, and he's another guy. Like I know we're going to get to Jared Patterson, but he's another guy that a lot of grassroots people don't think is conservative enough.
Wow.
And I think that's a big loss for the party.
And because I compare like Crenshaw like to Chip Roy in a sense that these guys are not afraid to stand up against the machine. There aren't a lot of Republicans who will do that, but these two guys will. And when it comes down to purity, which these primaries always are, is that what cost Chip Roy the lower second place finish? And is that what cost Crenshaw the election tonight?
I think you could make that case for Chip Roy for sure. It definitely is for Crenshaw. That's definitely it. Mm. You know, there are times when he has not sided with the president, where he was supporting the war in Ukraine and you know, some other things that just go against the grain. He's not a toe-the-line kind of congressman. And people always, in focus groups and things like that, people will say, I want a congressman who's going to stand up. But then come election time, they don't always vote.
All right, just a few more races here,
Can we talk about Jared Patterson here, the incumbent the State House there
in
District 106?
Republican in Frisco on the Denton County side.
Yeah. And you know, he's, conservative and has been a loyal conservative throughout. He had somebody running pretty far to his right this time around. He's holding 55% of the vote right now. It hasn't been called for him yet. I'm curious, your thoughts, Vinny, with the party, the evolution of the party here in Texas. You have Larry Brock, who comes in second there with almost a third of the vote. This is a guy, for people who aren't familiar, who calls himself a J6 political prisoner, served more than a year in prison for January 6th. He was down on the Senate floor with the green hat, the green helmet on, and zip ties that day, running for office. And again, he's in second right now, almost a third of the vote.
But Jared's going to win this, it looks like, if this trend continues. He's at 55% of the vote.
Well, every cycle, if people come out and go, all right, Jared Patterson's not conservative enough.
Which is striking to me, because Patterson's one of the most conservative guys that I can think of in the legislature.
And they keep finding, you know, more and more extreme candidates to run against him, and this is the most extreme yet. Voters in 106 think Jared Patterson's plenty conservative enough.
Mm. Let's look at State House District number 98, too. That's another one that ended up on TV a lot. This is Tarrant County, Grapevine, Colleyville, places like that. Keller, I believe, Armin Mazzani versus Fred Tate. And it looks like Mazzani, this was a contentious race here on the Republican side.
Expensive. A lot of TV ads. I didn't even know who they were.
Now you do.
Turn off my news in here.
They were dominating the airways for a while in North Texas here, but Mazzani.
And for a state house race, that's a lot of money.
Right. That's a lot of money for a state house race. Why was this? I mean, the governor got involved here. Millions of dollars spent for a state house race.
For a state house race.
And Mazzani looks like he's, it's 60%
pretty comfortable
of the vote in.
Yeah, about 54%
of the
vote.
He's 54% of the vote.
But hasn't been called yet.
Is that surprising at all to you?
Well, and some really hot button issues on this one, too. I was kind of torn on this race because I thought Fred Tate would do a little better.
The governor did, too.
You know, but I think there's a lot of enthusiasm around the Keller mayor. And he's touched on a lot of the hot. He's a Sharia law, opponent, and that's a hot issue. So he's, I think he's well liked. I think he's done a good job in the campaign, and he's going to win it. But yeah, this was a crazy amount of money spent on this race.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
All right, for so a $600 a month job.
You know,
been there.
You know, man.
But Keller's such a crazy place because they really don't. No one gets along in Keller. You know, it's one of those things where everybody's at each other's throats. But that's one guy they can rally around. So that's good for them.
So final moments here, too. Take away from the Tuesday primary election. What is it for you?
For me, it's the huge turnout in the Democratic primary and the enthusiasm factor. The fact that we outvoted Republicans for the first time in 20 years, and that you have a nationally contested race for Senate. I mean, you know, we were lucky to get Beto O'Rourke, who nobody knew until he started skating around who he was, or Morales in a pickup truck. You have to have some kind of something to catch the attention. But here you got two well-funded, well-liked candidates running for the U.S. Senate because they both thought they have a chance to win. And it incited a lot of people to vote. And if that enthusiasm continues into November, and a lot of Republicans stay home or they switch parties, then you could see the crack in that red wall that we've been talking about for 20 years, Jason.
20 years.
Vinny?
Let's be careful with the there's lots of new Democrats. If you analyze the early voting numbers, there were really only 10% new Democrat voters. A lot of the primary voters in the Democrat race were people who had voted in the general before but had never voted in the primary before. So let's be careful how we use our math here. If you take that out of the equation, everything tonight went pretty much according to plan. I mean, I think, Corn and Paxton finished razor sharp close. Tallarico Crockett would be razor sharp close, although we didn't count on the crazy Dallas stuff. And for the most part, the people we thought would win and do well did. A couple of outliers, but I think this thing went down pretty much the way everybody thought.
Well, the legal case is one we're going to be watching here on Wednesday, Thursday, if it goes into Friday, to see what happens with the Supreme Court telling Dallas County you cannot count the votes that were cast between 7 and 9, never mind the Dallas County judge. A judge in Dallas County gave them permission to keep the polls open because of so much confusion about where people were supposed to vote. So
I will say, as we get ready to sign off here, Williamson County finally came through with the numbers in the Democratic Senate race. And at this point, there's still a fair amount of vote to be counted in different places around the state. But James Tallarico is up by almost 133,000 votes.
53%
over Jasmine Crockett now, with 73% of the estimated total vote in, according to the AP.
Yeah, I think that puts him in a very nice position. Even if Jasmine wins 60-30 here in 6040, I guess, in Dallas County on Election Day, it's going to be hard for her to make that up.
We'll leave it there. And
Domingo and Vinny, thanks so much, man. I always appreciate the insight and the experience you guys have in campaigns and Texas politics, too. So thanks so much for that, and we appreciate
you. Let us know if Barack calls.
Let us know, Domingo.
We'll let you know.
And thanks so much for staying up late with us, or if you're listening to this in the coming days. Hope you get something out of it here, because there's still a lot to be playing out.
Yeah, we thought we were going to be done after tonight.
Thought it'd be an easy night.
Never works that way, though. Thanks for being with us. Really appreciate it. Yeah.